Hello and welcome to the first episode of the Abattoir Presents podcast. This is the podcast affiliated with Abattoir, the Abattoir e-zine, which itself is affiliated with Flying Island Press. This has been a long time in coming. I've been trying to find the right story to launch this with, and I think I managed to do that with Justin McCumber's In the Deep Dark. Abattoir will be a psychological horror e-zine. And so basically, if you're listening to this, you're listening to our first issue. There will also be, on a link in the website, the opportunity to purchase this story in EPUB format and Mobi format for your Kindle. So please support the artist and the magazine by buying the EPUB if you like the story. The podcasts will always be free, so you will be able to appreciate the stories that we put out. And other than that, I just wanted to let you know a little bit about Justin, for those of you who aren't familiar. He is one of the aging masses, wondering where all his youth went, trying to discover who he really is before he dies. Until then, he's a full-time writer and co-hosts a podcast called The Dead Robot Society. He has two novels coming out in the near future, A Minor Magic and Haywire. He's also happily married and basks in the frantic glory of too many pets. I've had the pleasure of meeting Justin on a number of occasions, virtually, and in one occasion in the flesh, and he's a great guy, and this is a great story, creepy and dark and lovely, and I hope you guys enjoy it. So we will see you next time on Abattoir Presents. In the Deep Dark by Justin R. McCumber. The mine was cursed. Burley hated thinking that way. He wasn't usually a superstitious kind of person, but there seemed no other explanation for it. The mine was cursed, and every ounce of coal they managed to dig out of it brought everyone involved that much closer to ruin. Every night shift was harder and harder for him to supervise, but as his eyes drifted up to the picture of his wife and two daughters he'd taped to the sun visor of his old Ford pickup, he remembered why he did it. Curse or no, coal meant money, and he had a family to feed. The sun was nearly down by the time Burley turned off Sewell Road and drove up the rocky path that led to the mine's office and parking lot. A metal sign reading Badger Coal sat off to the right of the driveway entrance. It was only 3 months old, but the white text and black background were already dented and chipped from shotgun drive-bys. Burley figured there wasn't a sign in the county that hadn't been given a personal touch-up by drunken hunters, but the number of shots that had been taken at the company's sign seemed excessive. He sighed as the scarred rectangle of metal fell into his rear view. 3 months, he thought. Is that really how long it's been since the mine opened? Sweet Jesus, seems like forever since I first went into the damned thing. Burley had spent nearly his entire life working in the mountains of West Virginia. He remembered being a child and walking with his dad through the tunnels his family had mined since time out of mind. His father had had to walk stooped over as he showed Burl Evans Jr. where he spent his days, showed him the long stretches of darkness that marked his progress through the mountains as he chased the seams of coal that ran wild through the Appalachians. The mines had seemed like a wondrous place to Burley, a place full of secrets waiting to be uncovered, and he'd joined his father in the mines before the ink on his high school diploma was even dry. A month later, Burl Sr. was killed when a section of ceiling caved in, despite being bolted and secured. Burley chuckled, but there wasn't any humor in the sound. Secure was a loose word when it came to coal mining. The mountain was going to kill you, one way or another, and everyone who'd worked in them knew it. If the rock didn't crush you, then the coal dust would filter into your lungs and turn them as black as the devil's asshole, slowly choking you to death. And if you somehow avoided all that, then the mountain would let the job itself drive you into the ground, twisting your back and burying you beneath pain and stress. Burley had lost a lot of people to the mines over the years, but his father had been the first, as well as the hardest. He thought of him every time he went into the mountain, and thanked him every time he came back out. How much longer Burl Sr. would look over his shoulder, he didn't know. But at the rate Badger Coal's Bluestone Mine was going, he'd hoped it would be a little bit longer. As he crested the final rise that led down to the gravel-covered parking area spread out before the office trailer and mine entrance,
The sight of a dozen men crowded around the low-slung cart that took people in and out of the mine indicated his workday was starting off worse than usual. Even through the metal body of his truck, he could hear them yelling. He headed for the nearest open parking slot, slammed on his brakes, put the truck in park, and climbed out of the cab as quickly as he could. Voices were raised in anger, and fists waved in the air as Burley stomped across the gravel, the power of his stride causing his feet to leave deep trenches in his wake. No one looked his way as he approached, but they knew he was among them when he reached the wall of men and parted them with a broad-shouldered shove he'd learned during his varsity football days. Being a former defensive lineman didn't help much when it came to humping through a mine, but breaking through a crowd was another matter entirely. "What the hell is going on here?" he yelled as he made it through the other side of the angry throng. To his surprise, he found his boss, Badger Coal CEO Ted Newman, cowering against the electric cart with his arms held up in front of him. Normally, the chief executive officer was a man defined by his calm demeanor and tidy appearance, yet today he was anything but. His light gray shirt was covered in coal dust and ragged black handprints, as was the blue paisley tie that hung half-torn from his neck. Bright red spots bloomed like roses on his left cheek and jaw, which Burley knew from personal experience would turn an ugly shade of green and brown the next day as the bruises settled in. The final touch on the surreal scene was the blood that dripped from his split lower lip. If Burley hadn't seen it for himself, he wasn't sure he'd have believed such a sight was possible.
Standing in front of the CEO like a mother bear defending one of her cubs was Ray Dennings, the mining company's president and temporary day shift operator.
As opposed to Mr. Newman, Ray was perpetually covered in coal dust, so nothing was unusual there, but the jagged wound over his right eye was new, as was the look of desperation in his eyes, which stood out like twin moons in a twilight sky. Ray's arms were up, and his hands were curled into fists, and despite his fear, he looked ready to go another round, if that's what he had to do. When Burley appeared, he nearly collapsed in relief. "Ah, thank Christ," Ray said with a mighty exhale. "I never thought I'd be so glad to see your ugly face."
"Don't defend him, Burley,"
a voice shouted from the back of the crowd. He thought it was Joe Timmons, the miner operator for the day shift, but he didn't turn to confirm it. More shouts went up behind his back, their angry words overlapping each other like storm clouds, and hands pushed and pulled at his back.
"Yeah, don't get in our way. You should be on our side, Burley. Goddamn suit stealing from us. I won't stand for it."
Sick of the noise and jostling, Burley whipped around, squared his broad shoulders, and said, "Shut the fuck up!" His command rolled over the angry crowd like a blast of thunder, bringing everything to a standstill. Taking advantage of the brief moment of quiet, he turned back to Ray and Mr. Newman. "What's going on?"
"They've gone insane," Mr. Newman said, his arms still held up in front of him.
Ray rolled his eyes, but whatever he felt toward the CEO was nothing compared to the anger he had for the crew of miners gathered against him. Dropping his fists, he raised his chin and looked every man in the eye with a steady gaze.
"Y'all better be glad I don't have the police here arresting the whole lot of you."
"We ain't the criminals here," someone said.
Ray cast around for the man who'd spoken out, but after a moment he stopped and said, "Yeah, well, I've got a cut here that says otherwise. I know you're all angry. I'm angry, too, but Ted isn't who you should be taking it out on. It ain't his fault. He can't grow money on trees, damn it, and he can't make coal throw itself out of the mine just by wishing it. The sad fact of the matter is that bills come due whether we make our quotas or not, and not is what we've been doing lately." Pausing to take a breath, Ray looked over the crowd, his eyes gauging what effect his words were having. When no one jumped forward to resume the scuffle, he nodded and carried on. "You want to be mad? Then get mad at your co-workers who haven't been showing up, who've quit, who've called in sick day after day. It's because of them that we're understaffed, and every man we're down means that much less coal gets cut. Less coal means less money. Simple as that." "I don't blame them," a man said as he stepped forward. From the corner of his eye, Burley saw it was Hank Stafford, one of the day shift men who bolted the cave ceiling after the miner operator was through chewing another cut into the mountain. Hank was a simple man, but usually he was dependable and level-headed, and that counted for something.
"This place ain't right, Ray. You've been down there, you felt it. This whole mountain is... it just ain't right. Whether you want to admit that to yourself or not is your own business. All I want is my money, and then I'm gone, too."
Encouraged by his words, the intensity of the crowd picked up again. It crackled against Burley's skin like static electricity. Hank wasn't the first person to talk about the Bluestone Mine like it was haunted. Almost from the beginning, there had been whispers among the men, talk of strange sounds and shadows that didn't move right. Burley, for all the time he'd spent down there, hadn't ever seen or heard anything out of the ordinary, so he'd blown it off as idle chatter from grown men who ought to know better. But, idle or not, he wasn't about to let the day shift crew use it as an excuse to riot like villagers going after Frankenstein's monster with torches and pitchforks in one of those old black-and-white movies. "Come on now, Hank," he said, forcing his tone to be steady and neutral. "We're all reasonable men here, so let's be reasonable." Hank turned his head, and a shadow passed over his eyes that sent a shiver down Burley's spine. It only lasted a second, but the sense of otherness lingered. "Don't talk down to me, Burl," Hank replied. "You've been in that darkness. Tell me you ain't felt it down there in the places we don't." "Enough!" Ray yelled, his voice like a grenade exploding in their midst. Burley was thankful for the distraction. Another shiver had started at the base of his spine, and if it had been let loose, he wasn't sure it ever would have stopped. Hank's words dug into his mind like worms searching for fresh dirt to eat and hide in. He didn't want to hear the bolter say another word, didn't want to look at him or see the mountain's shadow in his eyes. "Yes, that's quite enough," Mr. Newman said as he pushed away from the minecart and stood up. He straightened his tie as best he could and smoothed the rumpled material of his shirt. The coal dust brought a sour expression to his face, but he shook it off and looked up at his employees. "This isn't one of my daughter's slumber parties, and I'm not going to stand here and listen to you people tell a bunch of ghost stories. I understand that all of you are angry, believe me." He reached up and touched the split in his lower lip, wincing. That message was received loud and clear. "And I doubt you want to hear the suit complain about how much money he's losing in this place, so I'll save that. Suffice it to say, we're all hurting, and it won't get better until we get coal production up. If you want to quit because some animal wandered down into the mine and hissed at you from the dark, that's fine. Come back tomorrow and I'll cut you your final check. Understand, though, that as soon as you're out the door, I'll be hiring your brother and your best friend,
and they'll be the one with a job while you're looking for your last penny at the bottom of a beer bottle."
Without waiting to see how the men would react, Mr. Newman pushed his shoulder back and walked toward the office trailer. The mob parted like the Red Sea, some still angry, but most casting their gaze around like they weren't sure where they were or what was going on. Burley sympathized with them. As Mr. Newman neared the trailer, he stopped and turned back. "Oh, and one more thing," he said, his bloody lip pulled tight in a grimace. "If any of you ever touches me again, it'll be the last mistake you ever make." His pronouncement over, the CEO spun back around and walked up the short set of stairs that led to the trailer. A few chuckles dropped from the day shift crew, but most of them grumbled and walked to their waiting vehicles. Whether or not they'd be back to work the next day was anyone's guess. Hank, though, remained where he was, standing alone as he stared at the mine entrance. From his expression, Burley couldn't tell if the bolter was glad to be out of it or if he wanted to dive back in. But after a moment, Hank shifted his gaze to him, and again a shadow darkened his eyes like a crow flying past the sun.
They stared at one another for an eternal few seconds before Hank sighed and ambled away toward his dirty brown 96 Dodge Ram pickup.
As the parking lot emptied, Burley felt like he should be relieved, but he wasn't. The dark gray clouds gathering in the sky above didn't help. Storms of all kinds were brewing, and he was doing all he could to hold on. "Well, that was a clusterfuck," Ray said. Gravel crunched like broken glass under his boots as he walked over. "Is it that bad?" Burley asked as he watched Hank's taillights disappear over the rise he'd driven over just minutes before. "Is what that bad?" Burley glanced to his left and gave Ray a don't shit me look. He usually only had to give it once. "Are we broke?" Snorting, Ray pulled a graying handkerchief from the depths of his back left pocket and patted it against the cut above his eye. The blood had already started to dry. "Of course we are." "Come on," Burley said, anger entering his voice more than he'd wanted. "I'm serious." "So am I," Ray replied as he tucked the dingy square of cotton away. "It's bad, okay? Yeah, things have never been great here. An operation like this is always a spend big first, get paid later proposition. I knew that. So did Ted. So did you. We didn't hide anything when we hired you away from Massey Energy, but it seems like all we've been doing is spending big, and so far there hasn't been enough getting paid later. We're hemorrhaging cash. Ted and I have been putting in our own money to keep things going, hoping it'll stop, but it's not. It's only getting worse." Stunned, Burley's lips went numb and his face tingled as blood drained down to his feet. Jesus, why didn't you say something sooner? Ray opened his arms and gestured at the space around him. You just saw why. We didn't want people to know how bad things were until there wasn't any hope of pulling it back out. But I think Alice said something to one of the guy's wives. Word spread fast, and you pulled up just when things were about to go from bad to worse. Burley hadn't known Ray's wife Alice for very long, but even in that short time, he'd figured her for a gabber. The fact that she was also the company accountant didn't make things any easier. Well, I mean, what's causing it? Where's all the damn money going? Everywhere, Burl, Ray said, his voice so loud and sudden it set a group of grackles fluttering from nearby power lines with indignant squawks. Christ, do I need to count the ways? First, Billy damn near blew his head off when that Jenny overloaded. Mac lost two of his fingers moving the conveyor belt, and Stu's doctor says his back will never be right again, all of which we're paying for. That wouldn't be so bad if we actually had some production to make up for it, but we don't. Guys are constantly calling in sick, or they're just not showing up at all. Today we were down 6 men, Burl. 6! If we lose too many more, we won't have to worry about money shutting things down, because the lack of manpower will do it for us. Hearing the tale of woe all laid out brought Burley's flagging spirits to a new low. He'd already known most of it, but having it presented in furious bullet points made it seem even worse. If there'd been any question that the mine was cursed, it seemed pretty well answered now. Jeez, this really makes you think, you know? Think what? Ray asked, tilting his head and staring deep enough into Burley's eyes. That the mine's haunted? Don't give me that shit. I'll admit, this operation's seen more than its fair share of problems, but I am not about to go call in some damn psychic or preacher. Shit, bad luck is bad luck, plain and simple. And the sooner we start dealing with it instead of looking for boogeymen to blame it on, the better off we'll be. So please, for the love of God Almighty, keep that kind of talk to yourself. The men don't need to hear their supervisor talking that shit. Ray was the rational angel sitting on one of Burley's shoulders, while the devil of his Sunday school youth sat on the other, and between them he didn't know which way was up. You've never, you know, seen anything or heard something? The only thing I see and hear is a bunch of pissing and moaning from grown-ass men, Ray replied. His words were shot out of his mouth like buckshot, meant to kill any and all superstitious notions, but for a brief moment, Burley saw strain in the company president's eyes. It was a fleeting thing, almost too fast to see, but it was there. After a moment, the older man shook his head and pointed over Burley's shoulder. Now I suggest you drop this crap and get ready to deal with your own world of hurt that's coming. 2 sets of headlights appeared on the driveway as Burley turned his head. A third followed soon after. Night shift was on its way, crawling across shadows that grew longer by the moment. Ty and Wilbur called in sick, so you're running light tonight, Ray explained. Ted and I need you to push the guys you've got as hard as you can. Dig, dig, dig. Get that coal out, and tomorrow we should have some new guys here to help. They're from Kentucky, but we won't hold that against them. Not much, anyway, Burley said. Glad to have something to take his mind off the dark turn his thoughts had been heading down. He had problems enough as it was without looking for more in the deep dark, so he heaved a sigh that emptied his lungs of old breath and bad thoughts. When cool new air came in, he hitched up his pants and went over to the sign-in board. The parade of cars that poured into the parking lot was as brief as it was eclectic. Most of the miners tended toward pickup trucks, usually old beaters at that, but a few of the men preferred cars, one even rode a motorcycle. The vehicles chugged and rumbled their way into place, and as the night shift slowly pulled itself together, the parking lot again filled with noise. It wasn't the angry sound from before, but it wasn't pleasant either. The men were here to do a job, and that was it. Burley had worked on friendlier shifts, but those hadn't been in the Bluestone Mine. "Okay, guys, listen up," he said, raising his voice to make sure everyone heard him. Facing him were a collection of hard faces that already seemed covered in grit. The glowing cherries of several cigarettes hovered in the gathering evening gloom like angry fireflies.
"I know this is the last thing you want to hear, considering we're already short-handed, but Wilbur and Ty called in sick." "Yeah, sick of this place," a voice muttered. A few suppressed laughs chased after it. Burley ignored it and carried on. "I need all y'all working hard and working smart, all right? The more cuts we make, the more money we take. If you need anything, let me know. Otherwise, get moving." The gathering drifted apart like bits of wreckage floating on the ocean, but they all moved in the same general direction toward the sign-in board. Instead of a time clock or a sheet of paper, Each man was given a sliver of metal about the size of a military dog tag with their name stamped on it, and whenever they headed into the mountain, they moved the tag from a hook on the outside half of the board and set it on a hook on the inside half.
At the end of the shift, or if a miner left the cave for any other reason, they would move their tag back. It was a practice as ingrained as knowing how to spell their own name, and one that was strictly enforced because it was how people knew where their co-workers were in case of an emergency. As soon as enough miners signed in, the electric cart was turned on, and one of the men got behind the wheel while others took a seat and leaned back. The cart sat only a few inches off the ground, so it was a pain to get in and out of if you had bad knees or a sore back, but if it was any higher, you'd lose your head as it drove into the 4-foot-high mine entrance. After it disappeared into the mine, some of the miners went after it on foot while others waited for it to circle back around. Age and experience usually dictated which did which. Most coal seams, due to pressure from above and below, ran in 4 to 5 foot high veins through the mountains, and it was cost-efficient to cut only that amount. Cutting more would mean cutting rock, and rock was worthless, plus it meant further stressing the cave system. The Bluestone Mine was a room and pillar operation, which meant the mines were cut in lateral strips that, if you could see through the mountain like Superman, made the cave system look like a well-laid-out city, with mine shafts being the streets and the uncut sections of coal and stone being the buildings that held the rest of the mountain up. The higher and wider you cut, the weaker the structure became, and gravity was a mean son of a bitch if you gave him too much rope to hang you with. It would have been easier to walk around and operate all the machines and mechanisms a working mine required if the caves were taller, but the chance of the mountain collapsing was too great to take, so miners either learned to live bent over or they found other means of employment. As Burley walked over to double-check the tag board, a young man in a red hard hat left the group he'd been standing with and approached. Even from the corner of his eye, Burley could tell he was nervous. It didn't bode well for the start of a shift. "Evening, boss," the young man said. A piece of tape was strapped across the front of the red hard hat, and on it was written Bud in fat magic marker strokes. Beneath it were eyes with too much sunshine in them, and bright white teeth that hadn't yet bitten through enough sandwiches and cold leftover chicken covered in coal dust. "Can I have a word with you?" "Only if those words are, 'I can't wait to get back to work, boss,'" Burley said, turning only slightly to give the new man on the shift a glare. Red hard hats were worn by trainees, and Bud still had that new miner smell on him. He'd shown great promise for digging into the dirt, but the anxious look on his face said that the promise might have fizzled out. "Not exactly," Bud replied, shoving his hands into the pockets of his sooty overalls. I hate to do this, but yeah, I'm not going back down there. I'm quitting." The urge to choke the young man filled Burley like a fire, but he clenched his jaw and held himself in check. Turning to face the newbie, he used all his will to smooth out his face, and then said, "I'm really disappointed to hear you say that, Bud. You've got good instincts, and I think you'd make a hell of a miner. Can I ask why?" "Guess so," Bud replied. He kicked at the gravel at his feet and looked everywhere but at Burley's face. "I thought digging through mountains and working with a bunch of guys would be fun and all, but it ain't fun. Not one bit. I..." Bud's hesitations and dour tone said more than his mouth did to Burley. "Don't feed me a bunch of shit and tell me it's a ham sandwich, son. Be a man and say it." Burley had hoped his words would embolden the young man, but instead it did just the opposite. Bud's hands dove into his pocket so deep he could have tied his shoes, and the skin on his youthful face went tight, pale. "Damn it, boss, I feel like a right idiot," he said, his feet swishing around and his nostrils flaring. "But it's scary down there." A short bark of laughter broke past Burley's lips. "Shit, son, it's just dark and all. Nah, that ain't it," Bud replied, his eyes finally settling on Burley and locking in. "The dark don't scare me none, not usual anyways. If that would have been a problem, I wouldn't have bothered applying for the job. But that ain't normal dark down there, boss. It's a darkness that moves. I've seen it, out of the corner of my eyes. The other guys, they play it off, make excuses, but they seen the shadows too. People don't go into that darkness alone if they can help it, and those that do, they don't come back right." The skin around Bud's eyes were red, and a faint shimmer of tears sat on his lower eyelids. "That's just nonsense," Burley started to say before Bud pulled his hands from his pockets and pointed a finger at Burley's chest. "It's true. Last night Wilbur went off on his own to check a ceiling bolt, and later on when we took lunch, Ty left early to get an extra smoke in. When he signed out this morning, neither of them said a word to us. Not one. They both had this glassy stare to them.
I knew when I pulled up tonight they wouldn't be here.
Same thing happened 2 days ago with Jesse and the day before that with Roy. And those are just the ones I know about. No, boss. It ain't nonsense. And it ain't right.
There's something down there in that mountain. I got no idea what it is, but I ain't sticking around to find out neither. These guys need the paycheck, so they'll tell themselves whatever it takes to make it okay. I don't. If you're smart, you'll leave this cursed place too. Hearing the words said aloud that he'd been thinking just minutes before jolted Burley to his core. But when Bud lowered his head and walked away, all Burley saw was one less body to do a job that was already too hard. As Bud passed the sign-in board, he took his red hard hat and hung it from the top right corner, then waved over his shoulder and went to his motorcycle, a dirt bike that had been modified past the point of make and model. He gunned the engine and left as quickly as he could without sending gravel flying into the air like a rooster tail. For that small mercy, Burley was grateful. "Well, shit," he said to himself. Knowing he had to do it, he went to the office trailer to let his employers know the good news. Mr. Newman was in his office at the back of the trailer with the door locked, but Ray was at his desk, and as Burley relayed what had just happened, his already drooping eyes went a notch lower. When Burley left the trailer a minute later, he felt like he was leaving the hospital room of a patient who'd just been told that they only had hours left to live. It was a terrible way to start a shift. "Yo, boss," a voice shouted. "You ready to get dirty?" Burley turned to the left and saw Sam Weller sitting down in one of the passenger seats of the minecart. All the other seats were empty, and no one was standing around to take them, which meant everyone else was in the mine and this was the cart's last run. If Burley didn't take it, he'd have a long hump down into the dark, so he waved and dashed over to his truck to get his red lunch pail and bright white hard hat, which were sitting on the floorboard of the crew cab. After scooping it up and jogging to the cart, he tested the hard hat's forward-facing light to make sure it worked. He'd put fresh batteries in it the day before, but you couldn't be too sure of those sorts of things when hundreds of tons of mountain were waiting to crush you amidst miles of tunnel as dark as deepest space. The headlamp shone bright and steady. "Thanks for waiting," he said as he took the seat opposite Sam. In the driver's seat, Dean Cotton nodded and pressed the acceleration pedal, then swung the cart around in a wide circle until they were pointing toward the mine. Overhead, the dark clouds began to break open and heavy raindrops spattered to the ground. The men in the cart barely had a chance to get wet as they slipped into the mountain. Inches above Burley's head was a rough-hewn cave ceiling. The conveyor belt that transported coal out of the mine sat along the right-hand side of the cave, its belt and rollers still for the moment. The way ahead was lit up by the cart's headlights, with more light thrown by the hard hats each man wore. It made for a fairly bright scene, but Burley wasn't fooled. The dark was ravenous, capable of consuming all the light you wanted to give it, and when you didn't have any more, it would reach out and swallow you in one lunging bite. Burley had never known a man to go missing for long in a coal mine. There were only so many places a person could go, and once alerted that someone was missing, a well-organized group of men could comb through a mine pretty quickly. The longest he'd ever known someone to be lost was a couple of hours, but even so, being alone in the dark of the mountain, no matter how brief, could change a man. He would be found, of that there was little doubt, but not all of him might come back out into the sunlight. You could see it in their eyes. A piece of them had gone, and would walk those twilight caves forever. Man was a pack animal that worshipped the sun. Take those things away for too long, and the mind began to break. That was why Burley always checked his hard hat light, and why he tried to keep his crews on task and together. There was reason enough to fear the dark without adding idle campfire chatter to the mix. After a few minutes of rolling over broken earth and bits of rock, Dean turned the cart steering wheel to the right, kept things steady for a moment, and then made a left. A rumbling sound began to vibrate the air, but seconds later it went much deeper than that, and came through the stone surrounding them. Quickly the sound was joined by a tumbling wave of dust and coal soot that swept through the mine like the ocean at high tide. When the cart's headlight turned right a second time, it lit up the hard-working night shift crew of miners. Mining was a pretty straightforward affair. Coal was in the mountain, and it had to be dug out. That job fell to Doug Renfro, though everyone called him Digger. Doug's weapon for clawing into the heart of the mountain was a large metal beast of a machine called a continuous miner that he controlled from a safe distance using a control panel like a kid playing a video game. The continuous miner was a hefty squat contraption that always reminded Burley of an armored badger or ferret, and at the front of it was a rotating steel drum covered in tungsten carbide teeth that spun fast enough and hard enough to carve out 5 tons of coal a minute. That sounded like a lot, and it was, but compared to the mountain it cut into, it was just a drop in the bucket.
After the area was cut, the bolters came in and, using a roof bolting rig, drilled long holes into the cave ceiling. In those holes, they inserted long rosin roof bolts that were not only screwed into the rock strata above, but the heat of the twisting melted the rosin and turned it into glue, which added to its load-bearing ability. Bolting didn't take long, but it was by far the most dangerous job in the mine. Once the roof was secure, it was the job of the scoop operator to drive up in his low-slung dustpan on wheels, load up with coal, and take it to the conveyor belt to be carried outside the mine, where it would pile up until tractors loaded it into trucks. Once it was hauled to the railroad loading area, it was out of Badger Coal's hands and no longer its responsibility. Everyone in the mine was there to help make sure this operation went off with as few a number of hitches as possible. If they weren't actively working a machine, they kept an eye on the electric cables that powered the miner, monitored the conveyor belt to make sure it didn't jump its roller, performed maintenance, and watched each other's backs. But there was always a person stationed outside the mine. With his radio always at the ready, the outside man's job was to look over the fans that provided air circulation for the mine, watch the generator that powered everything, and be ready to handle any equipment failures that might come up. Burley, as the night shift supervisor, was there to make sure everyone did their jobs as efficiently and safely as possible. "Digger's really giving her hell," Sam yelled once the cart was stopped next to the bolting rig. His partner, Billy Sims, was already prepping the machine and locking yard-long drill bits into place. "We're going to be racing to keep up." Dean nodded at him, his face as humorless as usual. "You and me both." He then backed the cart up, turned left, and pulled forward until he and Burley were stopped next to the scooper, which was Dean's duty to operate. The ride into the mountain had been as quick and economic as a person could want. "You should have been a race car driver, Dean," Burley said as he gathered up his lunch pail and rose from the cart. Shaking his head, Dean powered down the cart and shuffled over to his scooper. "No way. Too dangerous." Burley considered the environment they were in and wanted to laugh, but he wasn't sure if Dean had been joking. The scoop driver wasn't known for his sense of humor, and most of the men took it as their mission to verbally poke him as often as they could, hoping someday to break through and get him to laugh or smile. So far, they had all failed. "Well," Burley said, deciding to let the comment go. "As always, safety comes first. Keep your head down, all right?" "Will do, boss," Dean replied, his hard hat light winking as he nodded his head. A second later, he turned on the scoop's headlights, adding to the mine's glow. Chuckling to himself, Burley turned away and headed toward the source of the cave rumblings. If the sound wasn't clue enough, the flow of dust was. Seconds later, he found a group of men kneeling together talking, while Digger sat with his control panel. Further down the cave, the continuous miner was chugging along, scrapping out rock like an army of meth-crazed gophers. Despite Bud's hasty departure and Ty and Wilbur calling in sick, the work was off to a good start. An hour into the shift, coal was rolling its way out of the mine, and Digger was into his second cut, driving further into the mountain. Ready to do his job and make the way forward safe for everyone, Sam drove the roof bolter from controls at the back while Billy guided from the front. Two young guys, their former red hard hats so recently off their heads it made their new white ones look pink, lugged the continuous miner's electrical cable by hand, making sure it didn't get crimped against a wall or dragged under a miner's treads. They looked to be doing a good job, but suddenly the miner's lights went off in a flash and it ground to a silent stop. As Burley looked around to see what had gone wrong, he noted that the silence had extended further into the mine. The conveyor belt wasn't rolling, and the distant hum of ventilator fans was gone. Something had cut the power. From his belt, Burley grabbed his walkie-talkie and his grimy thumb to press the talk button. "Chester, we've lost power. What's going on out there?" Once he let off the button, the walkie-talkie's speaker spat out a blast of noise that made Burley's teeth ache. Through the static and squealing, he thought he heard the outside man say, "This rain, crazy, like, times. Check, right back." Mercifully, the noise cut out as Chester closed his end of the radio channel, but Burley was aggravated at how spotty the communications had been. "Dean," he said, turning his hard hat light on the scoop operator who was sitting idle a few yards down the mine, "head out there and see what's going on. If it looks serious, let me know so we can get ready to evacuate." Turning the scoop on, Dean nodded and backed down the tunnel, his headlights chasing after him. Once he turned, the darkness of the mine seemed to creep in a bit. "What's going on, boss?" Digger yelled. "Someone forget to pay the power company?" Burley laughed, as did everyone else. "I figured you guys had it too easy. Dean's bringing back some pickaxes, and we're going to do this the good old-fashioned way."
"Old-fashioned, yeah," Digger replied, the light above his head swinging back and forth as he shook it. But I don't know about good.
It was good enough for my granddad, Burley told him, but I get your point. Chester said something about the rain, but there was too much static, so I sent Dean up to take a look. We'll know more in a couple of minutes. As the men stood around waiting to hear news, Burley glanced over at his lunch pail and wondered if it wasn't too early for a bite. He wasn't all that hungry, but if the Jenny was having a problem, then their schedule was about to get screwed, and who knew when they'd be able to stop and eat. People called him Burley for a reason, and that reason needed upkeep in the form of an occasional Twinkie. When his eyes settled on the red metal of his lunch pail, he noticed a thin stream of water running next to it. Chester's claims of heavy rain took on all new meaning. Rainwater getting so far into the mine wasn't a problem, but if things didn't slack up, he was going to have to see about getting a couple of guys on sandbag duty at the mine entrance. Yet one more thing to worry about. Boss? The word crackled from Burley's walkie-talkie like cannon fire. You there? If the situation weren't so dire, Burley would have laughed. Of course I'm here, Chester. What's going on? Static split the darkness, and then rain and wind hit the microphone like a hurricane. Hell if I know. Jenny looks fine. Plenty of fuel. None of the circuits have tripped. It's just not running. I'm going to need to open her up and take a better look. I'll need help doing it, though. Can you send somebody out here? What? Burley looked at his handheld like it was an alien artifact dug out of the ground at his feet. I already sent Dean up there. Ain't he with you? Dean? Chester replied, his tone sounding as out of sorts as Burley felt. Yeah, Dean. He ain't there yet? No. He should be. Maybe... Go check the entrance. We're getting some water down here, so maybe the scooper's wheels got stuck in some wet grit. Okay, boss, will do. Be right back. Standing around waiting was not one of Burley's strong suits. Even when there wasn't anything to do, he always managed to find something. Idle hands were the devil's playthings, and he believed that. But at the moment, staying still was for the best. The men stood together and chattered, their voices low. Some made jokes, but the laughter they sparked was forced. Something to drive back the weight and the dark. Burley opened his mouth to offer a few reassuring words for his crew, but his walkie-talkie squawked, interrupting him. Boss, Chester said, his voice out of breath, there ain't no sign of Dean. I looked as far into the mine as I could from the outside, but I don't see him or the scooper. He's nowhere to be seen in the parking lot, neither. He might be lost down there. Burley didn't believe that was possible, not for one moment. Between the scooper and the mine cart, Dean knew his way through the mountain like a mole knew his own den. But if he wasn't lost, then where was he? All right, he said into his walkie-talkie, get back to the Jenny and take another look. I'll send a couple more guys out to help. Hopefully they'll find Dean along the way. The scooper might have run out of juice, and then y'all can get this problem sorted out. A squall of noise blasted from the handset, and then Chester said, sounds like a plan, boss. If Dean shows up, I'll give you a holler. Nodding as though the outside man could see him, Burley clipped the walkie-talkie back on his belt and turned to the two young cable carriers. Either of you know how to operate a minecart? Both boyish faces nodded. Like driving a go-kart, sir, one of them said, blonde, with a too easy smile. His name was Dale, but his work performance hadn't been impressive enough for Burley to care much. The young man had just enough written all over him, as did the lanky brunette next to him, Ricky. They'd been hired as a pair right out of high school, and more than likely they'd be fired the same way once the mine was in better shape and Mr. Newman could afford better than just enough. Uh-huh, Burley replied, wishing his confidence level was higher. Well, the two of you get in, and head on out of the mine to help Chester. When you see Dean, pick him up too. Think you two can manage that? Dale and Ricky nodded their heads like frogs bobbing on a pond. Then get going, Burley said with a sigh. You help Chester get that Jenny running in the next 30 minutes, and I'll buy you both a pizza when we get out of here. Needing no more encouragement, the two men bumped fists and duck-walked to the minecart. Luckily, it was already pointed in the direction they needed to go, and so Burley didn't have to see them bang the poor thing up, turning it around. The cart's electric engine sounded like a cat getting kicked off the back porch as they spun the wheels and took off. Okay, y'all, Burley said to the rest of his men. We might as well sit down by the miner and eat until we hear something. The night shift crew gathered in the dark, their hard hats like comets flying around in the black. It only took a few minutes for the small collection of men to get their lunch pails and settle in. Out of habit, Burley did a quick head count. He blinked when he came up one short. He counted again, ran through all the people who weren't there and why, and found himself still missing one. Scanning through the gritty faces and reflector-covered vests wasn't easy, so it took a moment to see who wasn't there. Billy,
Where's Sam? He asked the second bolter, who was leaning against a wall and chomping into a strikingly white sandwich. His fingers were covered by a plastic bag to keep the coal dust off the bread. After gulping down a big swallow of sliced ham, Billy said, I think you went to go take a piss. There wasn't anything unusual about that, but a small chip of ice dropped into Burley's stomach, and it spread an uneasy chill through him. He didn't know why that was, or where the feeling came from, but that didn't make it go away. You think? Billy nodded. Yeah, boss. After we got the rig moved, I saw Sam head down toward one of our relief spots. He takes a long damn time to piss then, Digger said over the lip of his thermos. Steam wafted up from it and drifted through the miner's hard hat light like a lost spirit. Wasn't that like 6, 7 minutes ago? Billy looked at the miner operator and then at Burley. His eyes round. I guess I didn't think about that. Sorry, boss. Don't be sorry, Burley replied, his voice hard. Be fucking smart. He then tilted his head up and shouted, Sam, where are you at? You better not be taking a shit. His words echoed through the lengthy system of coal cuts, the sound reflecting at odd times and strange pitches. No other noise came back but the dwindling whine of the mine cart. Sammy, Billy said. His voice lacked the punch of Burley's, and it had a slight tremble to it. Come on, man. We've got enough to worry about without your screwing around. When several seconds went by without an answer, Burley pointed a thick finger at Billy and said, All right, numbnuts, he's your buddy, so you'd better go find him. What? Billy asked. Being a West Virginian coal miner, he wasn't in any danger of being confused with a tropical bathing suit model, but his skin went especially white as he stared up at his boss. Me? Burley nodded. But I... Words tumbled over themselves in the back of Billy's mouth, all of them afraid to get too close and accidentally come out. You can't... I sure as shit can, Burley replied, the chill in his stomach all but gone in the heat of his building anger. I'll be alone, though, Billy said. He clamped his teeth down as soon as the last word left his lips, and he looked at the men around him with embarrassment. To his obvious thanks, none of them laughed or made a joke. No. The look they exchanged among them was one of understanding. Getting more pissed off by the second, Burley's nostrils flared and warm breath blasted out of them. Yeah, and right now so is Sam. Now get off your lazy ass and... Burley felt the earth suddenly rumble beneath his feet, and a roar filled the mine with horrendous noise.
It was a terrible sound, a noise like rocks being blown apart and titanic forces grinding the bones of the mountain into dust. With it came the sound of metal being bashed into scrap, and beneath that was the faint, high-pitched warble of human voices screaming in agony. The gathered men looked around them with dread. Coal dust billowed toward them like a hellish fog from the direction the cart had gone.
Come on, Burley said as he took off at a stooped run toward the noise and dust. The men ran, their heavy breathing loud in the tunnel, but it was nothing compared to the grisly crumble of rock hitting rock and stone tearing from stone. There wasn't any more screaming beyond the first bout of it. Not a good sign. Half a dozen beams of light bounced crazily off the tunnel walls, jittering so much that they were nearly useless. A minute later, red and white reflective tape flashed ahead of them. Hurry! Burley urged, pumping his arms and legs past the point of pain. It had been a long time since he'd had to run any sort of distance, and the fire that coursed through his body was proof of it. He barely had enough breath in him to shout. By the time he made it to the cart, or what remained of it, he was ready to pass out. Considering what he saw, that might have been preferable. Buried beneath a massive slab of shale was the crumpled remains of the mine cart, its orange paint and metal frame barely recognizable under the dust and loose bits of rock. It had fared much better than the two men in it, however. One body was lying half out of the cart like he'd tried throwing himself out of the way, his face beaten to an unrecognizable bloody pulp, while all that could be seen of the other was a purple-shaded hand peeking out from the left side of the cart. Burley didn't hold out much hope for the owner of the purple hand, but he went to the rock and started lifting, hoping against hope that the other person might still be alive. I think that's Dale, he said to himself as his helmet light swept across the exposed dirty blonde hair. He couldn't remember which kid had sat on which side of the cart, but Dale's hard hat, while doing nothing to save his face from being mangled, had protected his skull enough to make identifying him easier. Even as his hands started pulling against rough stone, Burley was thinking of what he'd say to the kid's poor mother. At least Dale's mom might have a son to still love, if they moved quickly enough. The same couldn't be said for Ricky of the motionless purple fingers. "Hurry," Digger shouted as he leapt in next to Burley. "I think this one's still alive." Burley's arms and legs strained to move the block of shale mashed into the cart, but his eyes never left Dale's ruined face. Deep cuts ran down his forehead and cheeks.
As though a large animal had jumped on the cart's hood and taken swipes at him, and blood dribbled off his chin in thick drops. His left eye was destroyed, leaving the socket behind it a vacant, dark red hole, but his other eye seemed okay as it moved in small, jittery motions.
A deep gouge tore through the soft tissue of his nose, flaying open his left nostril like a butterfly shrimp. Below it, his lips were battered strips of flesh that couldn't hide his shattered teeth and bloody gums. A sound bubbled up from his throat, but Burley couldn't tell if Dale was attempting to speak or just trying to breathe. It didn't matter either way if the rock didn't come off him. Every available fiber of muscle was put against the shale slab. Every hand and shoulder, and the mine was filled with grunts. Metal squealed as rock ground against it, but try as the men did, there was nothing they could do to shift the stone off the cart. It weighed an easy 1,000 pounds, and it was so broad and flat that it was impossible for the men to get leverage and shift it off the cart's frame. They were going to need help to save Dale's life. Stepping away from the devastation, Burley unclipped his walkie-talkie and hammered the transmit button down. "Chester, you still out there?" Static boiled the air for a moment, but then was replaced with the sound of rain and wind. "Yeah, boss. What's going on in there?" That was the real question, wasn't it? "There's been an accident. The ceiling... some shale came loose. It looks like Ricky's dead, and Dale's in bad shape. Real bad. I need you to call emergency services. Tell them to bring some lifting and cutting equipment. Then I need you to call Ray and Mr. Newman and tell them to get their asses out here. Got that?" I got it," Chester replied. The outside man sounded shell-shocked. "I'll be down with you as soon as I'm done." Burley shook his head at the walkie-talkie. "No, don't. We need someone out there in case something else happens. Besides, one more person ain't going to make a difference lifting this thing." "But..." "No buts," Burley said quickly, adding a harsh edge to his voice. "Just make the calls and stay put. You hear me, Chester?" The walkie-talkie was silent for several long heartbeats, but eventually the outside storm broke through their tiny speaker again. "Yeah, I hear you. I'm making the calls right now. I'll be back with you as quick as I can." Thankful for small favors, Burley nodded to himself and returned the walkie-talkie to his belt. In front of him, the miners continued to strain against the rock that had killed one man and was close to killing another. Each of them knew that it could easily have been them under that shale, dead or dying. And if it had, they'd want their friends and co-workers to do all they could to save them. So they did, grunting and crying and cursing all the while. A sound in the darkness behind Burley made him turn. It was a noise like rocks shifting. He was afraid he was about to see more cave ceiling fall. His hard hat light swept the black like a hand feeling around in midnight waters for something to hold on to. All there was were rocky walls, cable, and a thin stream of water. He turned to the left and then the right, checking every passage. Nothing could be seen down either direction beyond endless stretches of black. As he took one final look behind him, his light hit on a pair of brown work boots. The uneven wall hid who wore them, and panicked that someone else was hurt, he scrambled to turn and run toward the boots. When he rounded the stony obstruction, he saw Sam standing in the dark. His face was calm, his eyes still and unblinking. He didn't appear to be hurt, just lost or dumbstruck. "Sam," Burley said, a wave of thankfulness washing over him so powerfully he nearly fell over. "Oh, thank God. I thought you were... well, you're not. Come on, we could use your help." Sam didn't move, didn't say a word. All he did was stare. "Did you hear me?" Burley asked. "We've got people hurt over here, so snap out of it and let's go." But Sam didn't snap out of it, or move. Or speak. His eyes were immovable as they bored into Burley. The night shift supervisor had thought the bolter wasn't hurt, that he looked fine, but the more Burley stared, the more he thought that wasn't so. Sam wasn't bleeding or bruised, but his skin, where it could be seen past clothing and coal dust, was porcelain white, while his lips and the skin beneath his eyes were dark, like cave shadows had settled on his face and didn't want to leave. And his eyes, which Burley could have sworn were blue, seemed as black as the cave around them, pupils so wide there was little white left. He looked sick, cold. Bumps broke out on Burley's arms and back. "Sam, talk to me," he said, taking a small step forward. Sam moved backward. His feet never left the ground, and his legs stayed stiff and still, but he still moved. Burley's eyes watered as they tried to make sense of what they saw. Then Sam's lips parted, the graying bits of flesh forming words in a pantomime of speaking, yet no words or air left his throat. Burley felt like he was watching a television with the sound turned off, but then words hit his ears with the closeness of someone whispering to him from just behind his neck. "I've seen it," Sam said, his voice soft, close, and out of time with his face. "I've seen the heart of the mountain burrow, and it's so beautiful." Pain lanced through the center of Burley's head, making him wince. The world was turning upside down around him, and he felt loose, untethered. Nothing made sense. He saw movement without motion, heard words that had no voice. Behind him was death, and ahead of him was something other, perhaps worse or perhaps better. His thoughts became hard to control, keep order of. Desperate to feel something real, he curled up his right hand and punched the fist into the stone wall near him. The pain was intense, but it was clarifying. "Sam, I don't know what's going on," he said, meaning every word, "but we're getting out of here. Now either come on your own or I'm going to drag you out. When the sun comes up, we'll get this mess sorted." Instead of doing what he was told, Sam smiled, his dark lips bowing in a way that made Burley nauseous to look at. "No more," Sam said, his words and mouth once again out of sync, his distant voice as close as a lover whispering goodbyes over a grave. As the words were said, Sam glided backward into the darkness as smoothly as fog drifting from an October lake to blanket the shore in wet silence. "No more sun for you, Burl," Sam whispered from the shadows. "We're beyond all light now, and we'll fall into it forever." A new jolt of pain hit Burley's head, striking through his forehead like a spike, and he stumbled forward. He reached out to catch his fall, and as his wounded hand brushed the cave wall, more pain spiraled through him. He clenched his teeth and howled, but the sound was lost as the mine trembled under the falling of more stone. The miners screamed, the mountain screamed, and Burley couldn't tell one from the other as dark rock tumbled from the ceiling and pounded the cave floor. Movement was everywhere, legs and arms and rock, dust washing over everything like nuclear ash. Burley ducked his head and ran without knowing what direction he was going, only that the rain of stone was behind him. His hard hat light swung through the choking air like a fist, lighting up everything yet revealing nothing. He was blind, confused, chasing shadows into insanity. "Stop running," Sam's voice whispered at the nape of his neck. Burley spun around and swung his hands out to push Sam away, but no one was there, and he tripped over his own stumbling feet. His elbows crashed into the ground. "Digger!" he yelled. "You out there? Digger! Billy! Anyone!" The only replies were distant screams. He reached for his belt and grabbed the walkie-talkie. His hands were shaking so much he could barely settle it into his hand and press the talk button. "Chester, talk to me!" Static droned out of the walkie-talkie, but it quickly became an electronic whine that built and built until it was a constant screech. Burley thought his ears would burst from the sound of it, but then the walkie-talkie speaker popped. He grunted at the useless object before throwing it against a wall and stumbling as fast as he could from the sound of the falling rocks. As he ran past a cave junction, Burley's light swung past a pile of loose shale and lit on a face that shone like the moon with skin so white and shadows playing across it. His feet skidded to a stop as his mind processed the vision before him. "Ty?" he asked. "I thought..." "It's wonderful in the dark," the ghastly white face said. Arms rose up and hands reached out for him. "Join us," a voice said behind him. Burley turned so quickly his neck popped and a jolt of pain raged up his neck like he'd just grabbed a live wire. In the opposite cave he saw Wilbur, his face just as white, his eyes just as black. "Let the shadows in," Wilbur said. Hands like ice settled on Burley's shoulders. He craned his neck and saw Ty standing behind him, his face like an owl flying into oncoming headlights. Dark eyes caught his attention, pulled him in. Ty's mouth opened, and for a split second, Burley expected to see needle-sharp teeth glitter in the light, but he didn't. He didn't see anything. Ty's mouth was blackness, a void, a bottomless emptiness, and it hungered for him. He felt himself falling down, falling upward into the black. Using all his strength, he twisted his shoulders and threw an elbow into Ty's chest. The younger man went flying backward, the darkness of the cave swallowing him whole. When he turned back to Wilbur, the sick miner was nearly on him, his dark mouth open and his bone-white fingers grasping. Dipping forward, Burley hit the man with a lowered shoulder, knocking him to the ground, then kept going. Rocks and dust fell all around him, the cave a constant roar of noise. He dodged the rocks that he could, bounced off the ones he couldn't, and hoped that his feet were leading him somewhere safe. As he crossed a passage, he thought his light passed over the shadowy face of Hank, the day shift bolter. But the vision was so fleeting that he couldn't be sure, and he didn't go back to look again. As he turned down one cut section of mountain and then another, the sound of roaring changed. It was hard to tell at first, as it seemed like one long grinding noise, but after a few seconds he heard a mechanical sound beneath it. That was when he noticed that the rocks had stopped falling. "The miner," he thought. "The continuous miner's on. We have power." Latching onto that thought like a man reaching for a branch as he careened down a raging river, Burley stopped to gauge where he was. With practiced ears, he turned left and right, noted a slight change in the noise to his right, and ran in that direction. He felt shadows pulling at him as he ran, inky fingers grasping for his clothes, his arms, his legs. His light crossed from rocky wall to floor to ceiling, but the center of his vision was dark, a hole that had no end. All he could do was run. Eventually, lights appeared in the far distance. They were dim, like the first stars at dusk, but to Burley, they were the most beautiful things in the world. As he got closer, he saw they were the safety lights on the back of the continuous miner. At the front of it was the rolling drum of metal teeth as it churned even deeper into the mountain. In confusion, Burley looked around to see how or why the metal beast was operating, and as his hard hat light swept to the right, what he saw hit him like a punch to the gut and dropped him to his knees. Bodies littered the ground like empty fast food containers. Some were crushed by rocks, their heads reduced to leaking pulp, or their chests caved in so hard and fast that their internal organs had erupted from their mouths like swimmers trying to get out of the pool before a boulder landed in it. Others looked normal, save for the vacant spaces where their eyes should have been. Nearby was Billy, his body laid out like he was waiting to be put in a coffin, his skin milky white and his eyes burnt pits. The rest were dead by the hands of those around them. Long drill bits poked up from chests of some, and others had their brains bashed out with heavy wrenches or hammers. Who did it? Why, when, or how, Burley would never understand. The worst of it, though, was Digger. The miner operator sat on the floor, his legs crossed, and his hands using the continuous miner's control panel that sat in his lap. The dead were arrayed around him like spokes on a wheel. He faced away from Burley, and Burley was glad for that. He didn't want to see the miner, didn't need to. The bluestone mine was filled with the stench of the dead, and shadows crept over everything. As cold fingers caressed the back of Burley's neck, the continuous miner emitted a horrific sound. In it he heard dogs barking, rotted trees crashing in deep woods, glaciers cracking in half, meteors screaming to the ground. It was a noise like the end of the world. The digging drum rolled and rolled until the mountain in front gave way, revealing a cavern so black it defied sight. As the stone wall crumbled, the continuous miner shut down. In the sudden silence, Burley heard his heart beating in a manic rhythm in his chest. It was a strained sound, but it meant he was still alive. What hope he felt died as a new sound entered the cave. It was a wet sound, a dark sound, and as his light turned on the cavern opening, he saw tendrils of darkness inching out of it. In a sudden rush of panic, he tried to get to his feet and run, but cold hands pressed him down. Above him was Ty and Hank and Wilbur, their dark eyes and mouths echoes of the cavern beyond. He tried to push them off, but their strength was that of the mountain, and their fingers dug in harder, sending ice into his veins. One by one, the dead rose up around him, their blood and brains and organs clothing them in colors he didn't want to see. Behind them, the darkness reached out, hunting, so hungry, and his light disappeared into it as though it had never existed. With it, he felt his sanity slip away little by little until all he could do was cry and wail into the blackness. When his hard hat light finally went out and the darkness overtook him, he was glad. He didn't want to see the shadows as they swallowed him up. It was enough to feel their cold, moist tentacles pulse and slide across his body. He was alone, flailing in the deep dark, falling into the midnight that had no end. One shadow amongst thousands, buried in the heart of the mountain. The end.